Yeah, the cigar thing would have been fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for coming in today. I appreciate you taking time out. You were down at the track?
I was over at the track for a 500 festival kind of kickoff thing. They're doing a big fundraiser, so.
Are you one of those people that get to drive around the pace car?
No.
For the season?
Oh, the drivers in town now?
They were running today,
really?
Which I didn't even realize. I knew that the event was at the track, and we had to park in the gravel lot outside. And I thought, why are we parking out there? And then when I got out of the car, I heard them running. So, yeah, they're practicing today.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
It was really cool, yeah. It's nice to see them out. I'm about perfect conditions for them today to run.
That's right, yeah. Nice and cool.
Yeah,
very good. Well, thanks again for coming in today. And Nick, why don't you take it from...
Thanks, everyone, for listening back in. Back in the office today, we got Mike Simmons, one of the founders of T2 Systems, which we'll kind of dive into what that's all about, as well as the Silo Auto Club and Conservatory. So pretty excited to talk to him, especially me, because I love cars, and Mike and I could probably talk cars forever. So,
which is
do you
why
think your dad can keep up on that? I'm not sure.
Chris can have a break.
This is why I'm going to take the lead, so we don't get carried away with this thing, okay? How long have we known each other? I was thinking about that before you came in, and I remember back in the very early, not Tech Point, but Anita, Indiana Information Technology Association days. That's when I think we first met.
Yeah, it's probably been 25 years, I would guess. At least.
I don't think that's possible. I'm not that old, Mike.
I don't think that's possible. Don't give me that.
And then, then we did some real estate deals together and did a few of them. We did Office Space, a few of them. And we've done the Silo, which is going to be fun to talk about. And...
everything I learned about commercial real estate, I learned from you, Chris. So how's that for an intro?
So your knowledge is limited.
It's limited. It's limited.
Do not take any tests, okay? So what's new these days? I saw a posting on LinkedIn today that you've got a new job.
It has worked out that way, yes, unintentionally. I'd taken an advisory position for a company based in Dallas, kind of my old world of parking technology. And I had done that been on that board for about a year. And it just has turned out the founder decided to take a little bit of a step out of the main role and still going to be very involved in the business. But we needed someone to step in and run it. And that was not at all what the intention was when I went on the board, but said I would be happy to step in and try to help for a while.
Wait a minute. I read an article in the Wall Street Journal about 6 months ago about in this COVID world when you're working from home, people sandbag by taking multiple jobs. Now, I know you've got a few other jobs, so I'm getting a little bit concerned here, Mike.
You know, the moonlighting, I think I have four 50-hour-a-week jobs right now, so I'm not really sure. I don't know how the math adds up to that, but no, it's not really that bad. But the other things I have are more board work and that kind of thing, so it's not full-time stuff at all. So
yeah, one of them's kind of fun because you get to drive cars around.
That is true. We started. I've got a few old cars, and so my wife and I moved downtown 5-6 years ago. And I was looking for a place to store a few, and you were actually good enough to help me to find a building that worked. The old Chef's Academy in downtown Indy, and we've kind of completely redone that, and so now it's car storage, car club, kind of event space.
Who would have thought that an old Chef's Academy would be an exotic car storage facility and club, but
you never would have imagined it, and you saw it before of the grease drippings coming from the ceiling in the in the test kitchen and all that. I remember looking at that and saying, "How will we ever get this thing to a point where it doesn't look like that?"
And somehow, grilling burgers and Lamborghinis don't seem to go together. I'm not sure how that fit. But
you know, sometimes
it may have taken some vision.
Sometimes the motors get hot enough; you could grill a burger on the top of them. But that wasn't the plan.
Well, why don't we let's go back a little bit, because you know, with T2 Systems, you know, you grew that company, and then made an exit. along the way. And you, like some other successful entrepreneurs in the state of Indiana, especially here in central Indiana, have been gracious enough and thoughtful enough to invest in other companies. So you're one of those people in particular that is seems to be doing it over and over, kind of the serial entrepreneur, if you will, but which kind of lends itself why you seem to have so many jobs these days.
That's probably true. Yeah. I mean, I stand on the shoulders of those that have gone before, the Mark Hills and the David Beckers and, you know, plenty of others who are just one cycle ahead of me and all that. And it's been great to learn from them. And I think most of us think we've had some level of success along the way that it's important to keep the local ecosystem going, the tech ecosystem. Right. And so we've invested angel investors in a number of companies locally, as well as some of the local VC folks that put money out into individual companies. So yeah, it's been fun, and it's gotten me involved in a number of companies here locally, and I've really enjoyed it. And I kind of feel like maybe responsibility is too strong a word, but I do think that it's important to keep this tech, local tech community going, mm-hmm. and to get the help that I got in the early days from Mark and Dave and Harold Apple, yeah. And plenty of others that were good enough to help me.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned Mark and Dave Becker and Harold Apple, and it's because of them and people like yourself that really Indianapolis or central Indiana in a way, and I hate to use this term because it seems like it gets overused, not only for Indianapolis, but maybe for other Midwestern cities. It's the Silicon Prairie, mm-hmm. rather than Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. But that's really true, because you see companies like Exact Target, Scott Dorsey, creating other companies as a result of the success of Exact Target and its sale, and then Dave and Mark's company, and then you. It's really put the central Indiana on the map. And do you feel that is not just my looking from the outside in an observation, but really happening here?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, there's actually pretty good data. There's a couple of interesting reports that talk about, I'm not enough of a data guy to know exactly how it was dissected and cross-referenced.
But I don't know. You know your golf score very well.
Yeah, I know
you
that.
You know the handicap, so you're kind of a data guy.
That I know very well. But, you know, there are a couple of reports that show Midwestern companies generally, VC-backed Midwestern companies, the return profiles are some of the best around.
Interesting.
And it's I just think my theory to that is, I just think in the Midwest you get a lot, it's just more down-to-earth crowd. You know, you have a little less hyperbole generally, mm-hmm. I think, with Midwestern companies that you do with on either coast. And, that's a lot about, it's been interesting, and I've seen it on both sides. You know, that is part of the mechanism that some companies get funded. You know, a lot of times mm-hmm. It's a lot of vaporware. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
And sometimes that ends poorly. And other times, those guys figure out how to thread the needle and make it happen. But you just, I believe you get much less of that in the Midwest and in central Indiana. I think you've just got a very authentic folks who are, they're excited. They're honest. They're trying to do something cool. I put myself kind of in that category. I mean, I would have had no idea when we started T2. I would have had no idea that we would have grown to, almost 400 people at one point. And, my co-founder and I were open to have just a little, it'd be cool if we had a little 10, 15, 20 person company. We kind of had a little control of our own destiny.
A little lifestyle company.
Yeah. So it was way more, our thoughts were way more modest than I think what a lot of startups today, a little of its time shift too, which is just different today than it was, 30 years ago now almost when we started T2. And it's just the state of capital and the availability and the whole startup function just looks a lot different than it did back then.
Yeah, and the changing economy. Now we see an environment that's really shifted significantly than just a couple of years ago, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's, you never can tell what tomorrow looks like, but fortunately, it seems like Central Indiana's been pretty resilient.
Yeah, no, I think that's very true. Tons of successful companies. I mean, you know, most recently, Lessonly, you know, being an example of one that has done really, really well. Max and his team have, it's just been a really interesting story to watch. And, you know, Max, an interesting cat, you know, he's one of these guys. I don't know Max really well. I've met him a number of times. But it's been interesting to see his approach to growing a company in a really good space and the success that they've had. And, of course, that's just one of many examples.
Do you think it has something to do with kind of Midwest kind of values as far as growing a little bit more organically than having this crazy cash injection and then figuring out what to do with it?
I think so. I think, Nick, that it's, you know, the term unicorn gets used more and more and more these days, right, with people who think, I mean, that's their goal. They have a goal of that they're going to start a company and they want to get to $1 billion valuation. And there are plenty of companies these days, partly because of the availability of capital, that are able to get there. That wasn't at all what, you know, the way I thought about it. Yes. Did I have a hope that maybe there'd be a successful financial outcome and that we would have a good run? Sure. But not anything like what, you know, the world looks like today. And part of it was the availability capital was completely different in, you know, the early mid-90s compared to what it is today.
Right.
Well, then we can move on to the auto world, which is getting outside of my wheelhouse. And that's why I brought Nick along
today. That's good of you.
He's our car guy on staff, you know. But
yeah, you can go get a cup of coffee or something, Nick and I.
Come back in an hour.
Yeah, we'll be good.
So what was – give us the background on the silo.
Yeah, so
How did it come? What were you thinking? Mike, what were you thinking?
Well, my wife asked me that all the time.
I remember the first time you told me. I think I was kind of thinking that.
Yeah, that's certainly true. We had raised our kids. We'd lived in Zionsville for a long period of time, raised our kids there. They went to Zionsville schools. My kids now are 26 to 36. And so when they got out of high school, we just kind of the classic thing where we kind of had more house than we really needed with the kids not being there. And so we said, hey, life adventure, let's go live downtown. That'll be kind of a fun thing to do. So we found this unique kind of penthouse, unfinished penthouse space that we were able to build out right at 1 Virginia Avenue. So we're kind of right downtown, right in the thick of things. And then in the meantime, over the period of 8 or 10 years, I'd started to accumulate a few old kind of fun cars, kind of collector cars, I guess. Just I call them collector cars because they're not necessarily daily drivers, though I do drive some of them daily. But, you know, I started looking for a relatively small building, you know, 10,000-12,000 feet, maybe something like that, where I could keep the cars. And then the Chef's Academy became available, as was that whole Harrison College campus there at on East Washington Street. And I certainly didn't want the whole campus. I didn't really need something as big as the Chef's Academy, but I thought I was in a pretty good location. I thought it was only a matter of time until development moved a little more east, which it's already been doing. Millhouse has built a couple of apartment buildings there, you know, kind of very close. Just in the last day or two, the building across the street and the 2.5-acre parking lot just went up for sale. The jail's going to be redeveloped. The heliport's going to be redeveloped. And so, and then you've got Angie's List campus on the other side and everything that's going on over there. So even 5 years ago, I thought, well, you know, this seems like it would be, if I'm going to bite off a little bigger building and more property, this would seem like a pretty good place to do it. And after a lot of consultation with you, that's, you know, kind of where we, you know, where we ended up. And initially it was, it was just a place to put my 15, 18 cars that I had. And then one thing led to another, and the next thing you know, we're in the car storage business, and we're a club, and we've got our bar and our liquor license, and so kitchen.
Snowballed.
You know, yeah, well, yeah. It's the curse of the entrepreneur, I call it, right? It's like, oh, I can have this little thing, or oh, maybe we think about this bigger thing. So
in spite of my early skepticism, I was really drinking the Kool-Aid after I got a feel for what you were doing. But
did you test the market at all, Mike? And I know it was for yourself, or do you have friends that had cars and like, hey, just can't put them anywhere? And you're like, hey, I think there might be something here.
It was back of the napkin theory.
Yeah.
That has proven to be mostly true, which is you look at where we are at 644 East Washington, and you look at Lockerbie, and you look at, you know, Chatham Arch, and even kind of the south end of Meridian, Kessler, kind of that whole area. You've got a lot of really nice real estate. I mean,
sure.
older homes, right? For the most part, there's newer stuff too these days, but a lot of older seven-digit value properties with two-car garage. That's a tiny two-car garage, and half of that tiny two-car garage is full of bikes and, mm-hmm. you know, other stuff. And so that was a little bit of the theory. It mm-hmm. was that for people who wanted to have a couple of fun cars, even if it's just a convertible, right, you know, that they're not necessarily going to drive all the time, they probably just don't have the space for sure. that. And so that was the thinking. I mean, even where we are, I could have a few more spaces in the condo where we're at, but it's not really very practical. I mean, to have kind of some of the older cars and all that and sitting around in there, they really want more environmentally controlled space and sure. all. And so so that's really proven to be true. And I would guess maybe a third of our customers, maybe half, are what you would call a downtown. So call it a, you know, 5-6 mile radius maybe from where the club is. Huh. But we also have a number of folks from the north side that they do seasonal stuff. I mean, we have folks from the south side that, you know, there are the use cases of people who, you know, unfortunately the patriarch of the family dies. He's got a couple of cars. Mm-hmm. You know, the family doesn't really want to sell the cars. They don't really have any place to put them. And so we've got a couple of those situations where, they've brought the cars to us, and you know we've tried to do our best to take care of them.
Sure.
And although it's a working business model, admit it. How many cars do you have there yourself?
Well, okay. Well, today
they aren't going to fit at the condo.
Today they don't fit at the condo, and today I have fewer than I did because we basically filled up and. We have a little bit of a partnership deal with a member at the club who's a good friend of the club who had some space a little bit to the east of us that's unused space mm-hmm. was for him at the time and is that at the time. So we have a lease deal where we've moved a number of cars over there. Well, of course, like the Cobbler's Kids story, you know, most of my cars are the ones who've gone over to the space that's not quite as nice as
gotcha.
The silo space. So all in at the club today, we've probably got 70 cars. We've probably got another 25. We're probably at about 100 cars, I would guess, okay. kind of all in. And of those, in total, I've got about 15 in there right now.
Well, that'll meet your driving needs, won't it?
Yes, okay. yes, it does.
Then, Mike, with the you know pandemic and everything, the car market's exploded. Have you seen that, you know, personally at the silo, as far as everyone needing more space?
Yeah, you know, it's we get calls, we get a couple every week, you yeah. know, where people are, you know, they've gone to Mecum and they've bought a car and they've, or, you know, whatever, you know, source, they'd always wanted a 62 Corvette. And so they went to Mecum, bought a 62 Corvette, but they don't really have any place to put it. And so, yes, we get, that's why we've just kind of gradually grown. I wouldn't say it's been an explosion, but I would say it's just been very steady growth where I think on the path that we're on, I don't think it's impossible to think we could have for the next couple of years, we could have 150, 200 cars probably mm-hmm. that we're storing. And a lot of that's driven by the fact that it's kind of like the COVID real estate market and everything else. I think that people just say, you know what, I've waited long enough.
Might as well do it now.
I'm doing it now. Huh. Now we'll see how interest rates starting to move and some of those things. I mean, they'll have some cooling effect probably in everything from real estate to even collector cars. But that market, the collector car market is really pretty strong right now.
It's pretty cool.
Well, it seems like I saw a news spot that used cars have increased in, or the price of new cars have increased by something like 48% over the last year. Is that true in the collector car market as well? Or?
You know, it depends on the car. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's across the board. I have a few cars that have absolutely moved up in value, a couple that I've had for 3 or 4 years or less that have probably doubled in value. I would say, though, across the board, if you just looked at the collector car market in general, it's probably been a 20% movement, you know, 20, 25% movement over the last 3 years.
Not a bad return.
No, not bad. But again, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that market reacts to, you know, to interest rates and all. It's the collector car market tends to not be generally as sensitive to that, to interest rates, but still, I mean, for people who have a little debt, wherever it is, some variable debt, and that starts to go up, that can change their thinking a little bit on the fun things, you know, that you buy outside.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
What are a couple of the latest and greatest ones you've accumulated?
Me personally or that are at the club? Me?
Let's go both.
Okay. So for me personally, I have not bought much lately. I kind of went through a big spree a couple of years ago, and I bought a bunch, and finally Liz said, okay, that's enough.
mostly BMWs, right?
I've got a number of old BMWs, I've kind of been a BMW guy. I mean, my first car growing up was a 69 Camaro that my dad and I built, and I was kind of more an American muscle, and then I eventually got more into European road racing, So I started kind of getting a little bit more involved with BMW. So I've had a number of M3s over the years, which I've really enjoyed. And so, yeah, that's been probably the core of it. The coolest one that I have, and it's not, I didn't buy it recently, but I haven't seen it for about 4 years, is I bought an 88 BMW M5 with the express intent to fully restore it. And it was a 230,000 mile California car. So it was pretty rust free, you know, didn't have to worry about those issues. And I bought it, and I actually ended up driving it for about 3 or 4 years because it just was so much fun. Yeah. And there were things it needed, but it looked pretty good really overall. And then finally I initiated the sequence of 3 or 4 years ago now, whatever it's been. And it's been in Ray Corman's shop, Corman Auto Works in Greensboro, North Carolina, for the last three to four years. And that's one that I'm just going to kind of have a stupid amount of money in. But, you know, for those who are familiar with the Singer 911s, you know, it's, and I kind of hate to use that because it's kind of the easy comparison, but it's going to be kind of Singer-esque because it's not most people who know BMWs will look at it and go, that doesn't really look completely stock. Most people aren't really going to know.
So it's going to be reimagined. Yes. It's like Singer kind of markets it.
In fact, my license plate that I got for it is Imagine with an M. Oh, there you go. And so, so that's, we're kind of playing on that a little bit. But it's a car that I'm not planning on selling it. I didn't do it, you know, to make money on it. It's a car that I plan to hold on to till I die and probably drive. It'll really be my primary driver. And I'm really stoked about that. I pick it up, and there's a big BMW club event in Asheville, North Carolina that we're going to go to. And then there's a road rally kind of right after that. So it's going to be fun to break it in and kind of that North Georgia, you know, South Carolina area where there's just a ton of great roads, and we're really looking forward to it.
So you're a guy that can pretty much drive any car you want to drive, and you're driving an 88 BMW.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That is.
Albeit it's reimagined.
Yes. Yeah. And it will really be kind of a new car. You know, I mean, it's the whole, I'm left a little cold by all the new stuff, right? I mean, I've got friends and, you know, acquaintances, new McLarens, new 911s, new Ferraris, and I can appreciate them all. I just don't really want any of them. I really just kind of enjoy the older stuff, but the great thing about this car is it's just going to be upgraded with rock and stereo and three blink signals and halogen or actually LED headlights and air conditioning that actually blows cold and you know, kind of all those things, the modern conveniences.
Working in air conditioning.
Yes, yes, in a 45-year-old driving experience.
Well, so the cool thing about that is, though, you can actually use it. You have McLaren or Ferrari. You can't really use that unless you're on a track. So you can push this thing and wind it out and on, you know, public roads.
Yeah, it's going to be a road car. You know, I mean, that's really the way I built it. I didn't build it to – I will probably ultimately take it on the track just for grins.
See what happens.
But it's not it was not really built to be a track car.
Sure.
Well, what is the coolest car at the club right now?
Oh, gosh.
There's some pretty cool ones, I know.
Or top couple.
Oh. Yeah, probably the coolest one, I think, is Dale Dillon's Ford pickup.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That he completely, good buddy Dale, a mutual friend, of course, of Chris and I, that he built something from the ground up that is positively outrageous to the extent that it got top 10 trucks at the big SEMA car show in Vegas,
right.
So, which is a huge deal. I mean, there are just so many vehicles there, and for him to get top 10 in that's just pretty crazy. So it's got a ZR1 Corvette motor in it and transmission, and you know, he can quote through the speeds and feeds, but it's all wrapped in this kind of cool matte black kind of patinaed kind of finish that's super cool. So it's really, I mean, we have a number of really cool cars, but that's one that stands out, is it's really one of a kind.
Right, right. Yeah, I remember him telling me at SEMA they put it right out front at the entrance, which is a big deal.
Yeah, and then they locally here, they featured it at the PRI show that's at the convention center, which was really neat. I got to go over and see it over there. So it's a, and I've actually driven that truck. It is not to be driven. I mean, it is not designed for drivability as its main goal. It's really, it's a great looker. And it'll go really fast in a straight line, but I would be terrified to drive that thing at speed.
Don't turn it.
No. Dale probably can do it. I absolutely, when I was in it, did not. I did nothing crazy.
Well, what's the next 10 years look like for you, Mike? Yeah, it sounds like you're keeping pretty busy. So I'm willing to bet you're going to have some interesting escapades going forward.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of figuring that out now a little bit. Liz and I spend more and more time out west. We got a place in Utah, and we really like it out there. It just so happens all of our kids now live in Utah, kind of spurred on by the fact that we bought that place 10 years ago.
And it's not a bad place to live.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah, we're in Park City, and it's pretty great. Great skiing in the summertime. It's great. And so, you know, we're sorting through that. We're kind of sorting through what that means for us longer term. I mean, certainly I enjoy the whole silo thing and, you know, the club and all that's been great. I've been doing a number of board things and that sort of thing, which is fun and engaging. But I really... And the reason that this has worked out, you know, with this latest thing with Tez Technology is I really do enjoy the teamwork piece of it and the camaraderie and the collaboration and solving kind of interesting business problems. And so I don't know, you know, I mean, will this be the last thing like this I'll ever do, you know, with these guys? Maybe, but maybe not. I think maybe I'm 60 this fall and still feel like I've got a little gas in the tank. And I have had periods. We sold T2, or I stepped out of T2 in 2016. And I had a couple of good years where I didn't really do much. Mm-hmm. And I played a lot of golf and I skied a lot and still been able to do a decent amount of that. But there is a point where you go, I kind of miss some of the...
Like, I got some experience I want to still share.
Yeah. You know, and it's just puzzle solving, really, you know, is what it is. When you step into a company to engage with them or to run it, you know, it's every day. It's a different set of problems. It's go to market. It's product. It's a customer issue. It's whatever it is. And I don't get a lot of joy out of doing those things by myself, but with a really solid team that I work with, and that was certainly true at T2. It was true at Sharpen when I took the CEO job at Sharpen for a bit. That was great. And it's kind of the same here at Tez. You know, it's just a really good group of people that I feel like, yes, Nick, to your point, hopefully I have a little bit of experience I can bring to bear. And a lot of that is around all the mistakes I've made, right, you know, over the years. I've done a number of things right, but boy, a lot of mistakes too. And that's part of what when you come into a company like this, a lot of it is just trying to help them avoid maybe some of the big missteps that they may take on their own.
Mm-hmm. It really shortens the cycle, doesn't it? If you don't have to go through all those misses.
In the early days, I would have been much smarter to have learned really good lessons from hard lessons from watching other people do things. I wasn't really that smart, but yes, I'm much better at it now. And that's the hope is that, yes, we can learn. They can learn from some of my mistakes and say, yep, I've been down that path. Let's think about these things. And and so that's been fun so far.
Well, we're going to enjoy watching for the next 10 years because I'm going to be around in 10 years still working away. So
I think you and I probably both will be. I would guess.
I suspect
Nick's probably going to be retired, you know, give him another 5 years and then he's out. But
somehow it doesn't seem to be working the way I had planned. What is this? So, but thank you for coming in today.
It's great to catch up.
And we look forward to watching the future.
Yeah, well, it's been a great partnership, great relationship that we've had over the years.
And yeah, it sure has.
Same for me. You're still my go-to guy when I need help on the real estate side. There's only one name in my Rolodex, and that would be yours.
Well, that's good. What's wrong with that?
So on that, we're taking you out to dinner. So.
Yeah. Perfect. Oh, yeah. Was that good enough?
Okay.
Did I clear the bar?
Bring on the steak dinner. Let's go.
I'm going to be the only one on the Rolodex with real estate. I'm going to take him out.
So. Chris Carman, real estate, steak.
Yes, and steak and wine. Yes, it's all good.
Well, thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.